We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
Welcome to the Heat Beat Postgame Show. I'm your host, Giancarlo Navas, and not with me today is Brian Goins. He is employed, he has work, but instead we have people who are not working right now, can give you live reaction after the game. Our trash tweeter, Jack Alfonso.
Hey.
And we have our 2K coach, Frankie Garcia.
Unemployed, gang gang.
Let's go. I'm actually employed as of yesterday again. Let's go. I have a flexible schedule, so I was like, I got work. I got Heat Beat tomorrow. I can't come in. I got to watch basketball. Heat take 2-0 lead against a gutsy win in Indiana. The Heat got two at Indiana as the 5 seed. That's real gutsy for them. You know, going into a hostile environment like that, seeing all those sad fans really made me happy.
Oh, Road Warriors. Road Warriors completely.
Road Warriors, one would
they
say.
They struggled on the road in the regular season. Came playoff time. It's time to turn it on. Go 2-0. Let's go.
That's big time.
Yeah. It's nice that they didn't get that Indianapolis flu. You know, that crazy nightlife, those clubs.
Oh, my God. It's a lot.
All the distractions. You know?
Every time you go to Indianapolis, you just know.
Especially with a young team like this. Like, you have Tyler and Bam and Duncan, right? You got a lot of young guys on that team that would want to enjoy the Indy nightlife and all that. You know, there's so much happening in Indiana, especially, you know, in the summertime. You know, there's lots to do. It's not even cold. And man, way to get it out. What gutsy win.
That's discipline. Gutsy that's win. Leadership.
Listen, that's leadership. Culture. That's Heat culture.
That's culture.
Oh, man. There's so much in this game. I mean, I don't think I've ever watched a more relaxed series. I'm not nervous. I mean, maybe with the big three, you know, there were so many stakes that even if they were to lose a game, you know, you don't even want the embarrassment of losing a game. I watched this Pacer team, and I'm like, they early outplayed the Heat in the first half, and it didn't matter. They were like tied the whole time. It just didn't matter. Like, the Heat are just so much better than Indiana. They could do nothing. We mentioned this last time. They didn't really work to get Duncan Robinson going early. This game, 3-for-3 within like the first minute and 30 seconds. And what was Duncan, like 7-for-8 from three?
Yep.
You know, 24 points on 8 shots. Just fucking ridiculous.
He's absurd. I think it's crazy that, like, you just can't keep him down. And that's what's, I think, going to be, like, particularly special about playoff Duncan Robinson as opposed to, like, regular season Duncan Robinson, where it's, like, yeah, I think a team can, like, scheme well for him and pressure him. And I think we saw that with the first game a little bit. I thought the Pacers did a good job on Robinson. But it totally doesn't matter in a 7-game series. Like, he is going to break free. Like, he's inevitable. He's going to start hitting shots at some point, and there's just no scheming for it. There's no – I mean, we'll see with, like, the Raptors. The Raptors have done a great job on him. But, like, I think in a 7-game series, like, there's no keeping him down for multiple games. Like, he bounces back, and he bounces back hard.
So, like, I don't even think Indy did too much in him the first game. I thought a lot of that was self-inflicted, that the Heat just weren't running stuff for him. I said last show that they ran a lot of high pick and roll with Goran and Bam as the screener, kind of leaving Duncan in the corner, and they weren't really going to him as much. Whereas this game, they were running a lot more action through Bam, and therefore that's kind of like what Duncan feeds off of. With a team like Indiana and even Milwaukee, I'm kind of interested, like, in how they're going to counter that, because what Toronto did was put OG Anunoby on Bam, which allowed him to kind of switch those screens or really put pressure on the ball. You need a guy that can both defend Bam and that could switch onto Duncan, that can deny passes. You need personnel that can do a lot of different things on defense while also being able to contain Bam. And that's like, I mean, Giannis may be the only guy on the Bucks that can do that. And I don't really know if they want Giannis to do that instead of kind of coming to help. So, like, just the fact that you have that decoy to take someone's best defender out of a play is enormous.
Yeah, Depot was guarding him, and it didn't matter. Depot's not all defense, all NBA Depot, all-star Depot that he was before, but he's still a very good defender, and it didn't matter. Duncan was able to have him trail on screens the whole time, and Duncan's so big that it doesn't matter if Depot is there in time. He's only 6'4", Duncan's 6'8", 6'9". And their release point is way too high. It's not going to bother him.
That's the other thing. It's like, if you have smaller guy, like, you know, if you have a lot of teams might try to have a smaller, worse defender on Duncan because, you know, they want to keep their bigger guys to contain dribble drives. He could just shoot over you. And the thing, when Bam and him do that little DHO play, Bam's such a good screener that you have to jam yourself in between Duncan moving really fast and Bam's big body. And it's really tough to get over those screens. That's why a lot of teams to opt under it. And, I mean, few guys can – I mean, Bledsoe is a guy that's really good at kind of getting over screens and staying with it. Indiana just has nobody. And Depot, as good as he is, just no chance. I mean, the Heat were getting every shot they wanted. They were getting to the free throw line whenever they wanted. Jimmy didn't have to go off. Jack, you and I were talking, man. This Jimmy Butler 3-point shooting thing is so funny.
It's crazy. I mean, what is he, 4-for-5 in the playoffs now? He's made over 12% of his threes the whole year in the past two games.
Is that true? You told me that, and that's factual?
He only made 29 regular season 3-pointers, and he made 4 in the past two games. So
he was saving them. He was saving his VC for the playoff time.
Is this like a Dwayne Wade-esque shooting thing that, you know, like, he's hot, like, his every season, oh, Dwayne worked on his three, and then, like, he'll come crashing to earth?
It's definitely a Dwayne Wade type thing. We were talking about this where, like, all the shots he's making are complete BS. Like, they are not, like, spot up open threes. They're just, like, bailout or, like, clutch off balance. Like, the most ridiculous stuff, like, where he's, like, double clutching and, like, yeah, I mean, it's totally a Dwayne Wade type thing where it's just he's making these on pure force of will. No skill is involved. It's just like will to win is forcing that ball in. It's beautiful.
It's great.
It's fun. It's so funny too because he talks so much shit right after, like, in your face, you can't guard me.
Yo, I hate that guy at the park. I hate that guy in the park. The park guy that you know is a dog shit shooter, and he's hitting you, man. Fuck you.
He's just throwing them up and just like staring at that ball until it goes in.
He must be so annoying to play against. Imagine if you're TJ Warren. Imagine TJ Warren has to go home and be like, man, this guy's kicking our ass.
I talked all that shit. I'm TJ Warren. Like, that's punishment enough.
TJ Warren has to look in the mirror and come to the realization of like, fuck, I'm TJ Warren. That sucks.
And I live in Indiana.
The nightlife, though.
The nightlife.
But I'm TJ Warren. TJ Warren was like, what, their fourth leading scorer today? What happened, TJ? What happened?
He's a good player, but he's just not number one option on a team. Good.
14 points today. Fourth leading scorer.
What was his shooting?
7 for 15. Very average.
Yeah,
no free throws. Did not get to the line once. 0 of 5 for 3.
He doesn't seem to get to the free throw line. He's somebody tweeted this out. He averages like 2 free throw attempts per every 10 field goal attempts in the regular season.
He got to the line 8 times.
He doesn't foul but get free throws a lot. He likes to get his shots up. So he'll get a balanced shot, floater. He loves that floater. The floater's pretty good, but it's just it's tough when your shot's not falling, you're not getting to the free throw line. Like, what else can you contribute? He's not a great passer. He's average or decent at everything else. And they just don't have enough answers.
I mean, I think
I like Brogdon as a player. Yeah, like Brogdon is a good player, but he's not number one. He's not ISO Dragic for points and clutch time good.
No. Funny to say that, right? Dragic is like one of the – Dragic is, by the way, I think he's in like the 90th percentile for isolation players in the league. Like, we kind of joke about that, but like he's legit like one of the best isolation players in the league because he's – you know, Dragic and Jimmy are probably the two guys on the team that can like consistently get separation. Tyler's kind of getting there, and I know that you, Frankie – we're kind of hard on Tyler, saying that he doesn't really get separation that well. And while you're right, he's kind of being able to create space lately, especially attacking guys that are like on secondary actions. And what I've liked most about him kind of coming into the bubble and the playoffs and everything, he's not just looking to shoot, right? So like earlier, Tyler's always looking for the shot, always looking for that little step back. He has a lot in the bag. Now he's attacking seams. He's whipping the ball across court. He's looking for other guys to get involved. Like the playmaking has come so fast for him. The player that he is today and the player he was in January are completely different people. And maybe you can look at the, and I haven't looked like too closely at the numbers, but I'm sure that the numbers are similar enough, especially the points in the shooting, but just the decision making, the floor vision, he's completely different.
Oh yeah. No, the pre-bubble Tyler was the one who had issues with separation, but ever since he's been in the bubble, he's been able, a different player. We've talked about this, that this is kind of like his second season leap in a way. And he's just been way more comfortable. The game's slowing down. His pace is way better. So he's not rushing into mistakes, rushing into quick shots, rushing into bad passes. And everything's more at balance at his own pace. And he's seeing things a lot faster. So it's helping his passing. His passing's been tremendous. He had that whip pass inside to Kelly for the layup that was gorgeous. He had he drove in the lane, kicked that out for Goran, and wide open. It was beautiful. His passing's been amazing.
He's Jack. I know that we gave him a hard time on draft night, but he's been everything that we wanted. I think that Christian said that he has to be like one of the best shooters in the league to make the pick viable, right? And we were so wrong about that. And not only has become a really, really good shooter, he's the way that he gets to the free throw line, he got to the line like 8 times today. I would think he was 6 of 8 or something. That's huge. I mean, getting to the free throw line with him and with that jump shot and with his really tight dribble. I mean, I made the comp before calling him kind of like Lou Williams, and I didn't think he'd be able to get the free throw numbers. I might have even been wrong about that. And I think Lou Williams is really good.
Yeah. I mean, we were incredibly hard on him
draft night with everybody, you know?
Yeah,
Sekou.
Could have had Sekou.
From tight muscles, tight workouts, signs of aging, to simply making it through each busy day, everyone understands what it feels like to be tense and sore. So everyone can benefit from TheraOne CBD products. Started by Dr. Jason Worsland, TheraBody exists to provide you with the best scientifically validated natural solutions to help soothe your body and relax your mind. It started with a revolutionary TheraGun percussive therapy device when Dr. Jason saw the benefits of using CBD in his treatments. He created TheraOne to bring you CBD products done right. A lot of CBD products claim organic but can contain up to 30% filler, and these fillers are potentially toxic. TheraOne tests their products 4 times before they get it to you. Every product is USDA certified organic, grown in the US, and their CBD extracts are the highest quality available anywhere. Use TheraOne's warming lotion in your morning routine, the cooling lotion or massage oil to recover, body balm for targeted relief, and sleep tincture to drift into a deep night's sleep. And now through Labor Day, Monday, September 17th, TheraOne is offering our listeners a buy one, get one free for all TheraOne products. But you've got to go to theragun.com/bluewire. If you don't love what you get from TheraOne, then send it back for a full refund within 30 days. This is not something TheraOne is likely to do again. Buy one, get one free at theragun.com/bluewire. But only until Labor Day. Go right now to theragun.com/bluewire.
I mean, I was sold the minute I saw him in Summer League. I mean, just an unreal shot. Like, but I mean, I agreed with Christian where, you know, we kind of agreed that he would have to be this otherworldly shooter to be even be like a viable NBA rotation player. But I'm honestly even coming around on that. Like, not that the shooting's not impressive, but that so much else in his game has impressed me. Like, especially since the COVID shutdown, like we talked about the passing and the finishing. Like, I mean, his arms are so short. Like, we never thought he could get here as a finisher. Like, he's so crafty through contact too. I mean, it's I'm gonna say this and it's gonna sound like hyperbole, but it's kind of like Curry-esque. I don't mean he's like going to be Curry, but I mean, like, in terms of, like, he's not strong, he's not particularly like otherworldly fast or whatever, but like, he's crafty around the rim, he knows how to use the backboard well, like that he like finds a way to get points around the rim despite all the physical shortcomings. Like, he's not built like a guy who should be getting any points near the rim.
And the thing about him, where I like the Curry comparison, it's not that he's going to be the level MVP level game changer like Curry is. It's just how they defend him. He's got the threat of the step back, he's got the sidestep, and he's got a good shot. They're going to go over him, over screens and over DHOs on him all the time. So he's going to have the lane. It's just about him having the speed, having the tight handle, and using the finishing. So now they're playing up on him because he's been so good with the floater that now he can blow by them and get to the rim. So it's all a process of all his other skill sets and him using them effectively enough to get to the rim. And his finishing has gotten so much better. His touch around the rim has been phenomenal on the glass, and it's really encouraging to see. I see a little Booker in him.
Ooh.
So still not as good as Justice.
It's not as good as Justice.
Not as good as Justice.
Good
player.
He's
Booker with full white parents.
So with Tyler, like with Steph, I think the big thing with him is the handle. I think that the dribble, and I think when people talk about Steph and everybody talks about the shooting and everything, but I probably think what's almost as important as the shooting and what oftentimes creates the shooting is the handle and how he's able to, with a really good tight dribble. Now Tyler's obviously doesn't have the Steph or Kyrie handle, but you know, for a rookie guard, I mean, I think it's really, really good and really, really promising. Not that he has to get to that Curry level, but I mean, he can realistically seek unassisted threes, which I think is going to be really huge for this team going forward, as we saw tonight. And that's going to open up the lane so much more. And he has It's such a cliche, but the dude has a good mentality about it. Really looks to attack, not passive. I mean, like, we look at a guy like Andre, who's a really smart player, obviously, like, doesn't look to shoot anymore, right? Like, he's not looking at the basket in a way that sometimes hurts the team and sometimes helps it. I mean, he's a really smart player, but I think he's just kind of aware of his limitations at times. And Tyler is kind of the opposite. He's always looking at how to get to the basket, how to get guys involved. Like, teams don't – there was a play – That fast break between Andre and Jimmy Butler, right, that it ended with Jimmy Butler not even getting free throws, right? It may or may not have been contact. But I knew that Andre was going to pass the ball to Jimmy on that break. Oladipo knew who was on the play. I think it was Oladipo and Turner. Everybody knew that Andre was going to give that up for Jimmy, right? And I think that Tyler is a guy that if he's in that situation, you don't know what's going to happen. He can pull up. He can pull up from mid, he can pull up from deep, he can go to the rim, or he can dump it to Jimmy, or he can give it to a trailer. Like, that's the dimension that you add when you're a guy like that that looks to score and looks to play make. He's good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just the growth. I mean, we can talk about the skills as, like, isolated skills right now, but, like, just the growth, the fact that, like, his handle has become more deliberate, it's become better, like, more crafty.
It's purposeful.
Yeah, it's purposeful. Like, I trust him more in these situations. And, like, yeah, I mean, we talked about
– when does Spo trust a young player like that in a playoff?
When? For real. I mean, we talked about it in the playoff preview that I was a little worried about our young players. But, like, with Hero, it's – I mean, he just doesn't have that mentality. You said it. And the fact that, like, as opposed to him in January, where he was promising in January, I really liked him in January. But, like, he does things that a rookie doesn't do now. Like, where he's looking to pass, where he's not just looking out for himself like that. He, like, whipped it across the court to Jake Crowder, and it saved a possession. He had a few passes that just completely saved possessions this game. Like, the fact that he's that multifaceted, like, where you don't know what he's going to do, and also just, you know, just has this one pure, incredible skill that is shooting. Like, I mean, the future is bright. Like, he's only 20 years old. This is his first year, technically. So
that makes it really so. Like, his, we talked a lot about his play today, and I think that's great. But the thing that I thought was interesting about today, in reference to him, was Spo for the second time went with him to close, and Duncan was not on the floor. And at first, you know, I mean, I think the game got to as close as 9. And I was thinking, okay, well, Duncan played a lot of the third quarter. He's probably tired. And then he kind of rested early in the fourth. And then he kind of never came in. And I was like, the game's kind of won. I mean, that fourth quarter felt incredibly low stakes. Even when Indy cut it to 9, it was like, okay, whatever. That's cute, you know? Let's go home, Nate McMillan, you know? I don't know. I don't know. I want to see in a high stakes situation. Frankie, do you think that, like, Duncan's going to be a guy that's off the floor? I mean, I want Duncan on the floor when it matters. I know that, to me, he's their third best player. He's there for sure. I mean, their offense is like 116 when he's on the court and 109 when he's off. Huge difference. They're minus like 3 net rating when he's off and like plus 9 when he's on. I mean, he's ridiculous for them. I mean, he's a difference maker. And for him not to be on the floor in leverage situations, because perhaps he's not the best dribble drive creator, can't really handle the ball. I'm kind of curious as to what you think there.
Well, one thing to take into account is that Miami's led at the end of the fourth quarter, had comfortable leads in both games so far. So that might be something to take into consideration. Duncan, I could see Duncan in a game where they need some offense, need a little push. But in that kind of situation, you kind of just want you have 5 ball handlers on the court with that Dragic, Hero, Jimmy, Iguodala, and Bam lineup. So you have 5 guys you can trust to handle the ball, 3 guys that you really trust defensively, and Dragic and Hero, they try on defense, so that helps. But if they need offense, I definitely think Duncan could come in instead of Hero. It might be one of those things where it's depending on who has it going.
Yeah, I think it's definitely situational. I think you kind of got it right on the money where Hero gives them an extra ball handler. I don't think the Pacers offense is that explosive where you know, we were talking about how a 9-point lead feels pretty safe even with like an entire quarter left. Like, that's kind of ridiculous, and that just goes to show what this matchup is like. Like, the Pacers aren't going to necessarily rattle off like four threes in a row and like put you in that kind of threat. So I think what Hero gives you is the ability to control the pace and kind of control the flow of the game more. Whereas with Duncan, I think if you're in a shootout, I think he'd be the guy you go to. Like, you want that guy who can ignite. But I think that was purely lead maintenance. Like,
yeah,
you know, like, so they're not actually trying to extend.
So I think what you said is interesting for two reasons. One, I actually think that with Duncan, you can really control tempo a lot because you can run a lot more DHOs. So you can, if you really want to speed up the game, you can do so. Or you can kind of run a lot of like little sets and then end it with the DHO because you know the shot you're going to get pretty quick. So as of Tyler, he's not really like the main trigger. He's more like the second or third valve right off of a Jimmy or Goran led set. So that's where I kind of disagree with you. The other thing is, when I look ahead, like, I'm off the Pacers. Like, I'm off Indy. Like, I don't care what Indy does. I mean, this series is fucking over. It's four games. It's a sweep. It were done.
You're ready for DJ Augustine.
I'm ready for DJ Augustine, and I'm ready for Nick Vucevic. So I'm thinking, like, how are the Magic going to defend? how are the Magic going to defend this closing lineup? And not like in reality, like, and to be honest with you guys, it fucking feels good that we're just like, you know what? This first round series, I'm not worried about. I mean, like, even the last time they made the second round against the Hornets, that was a fucking dogfight. Mm-hmm. You know, Dwayne and the purple shirt guy, Goran's monster game seven, right? Like, that was a Kemba Walker living at the free throw line. I was stressed.
Kemba and Jeremy Lin.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. You couldn't breathe on Jeremy Lin. He was getting to the free throw line.
That was when Hassan was doing all those little headbang.
Bro, we're here laughing at Goran giving fake CPR to Jimmy on the floor and Jimmy telling Tyler, tag me in your tiki talk. This is fun.
They're having fun out there.
They're playing with house money right now.
Yeah.
Oh my God. This is golden. I miss this.
They're also such a young team. Like, you know, whereas in 2016, like, when they're playing the Hornets and the Raptors, like, they had young players on that team, but it was an old team. Like, you,
Joe Johnson.
Yeah, Joe Johnson. Luol Deng was like your second best player on that team. Like, that team needed to win then, or they were never going to win anything past that. Whereas this team, like, yeah, I mean, partly it's because the series is a lot less competitive than it was against the Hornets, but it's also like the future is so bright for like Hero and Bam. And like, I think they clearly realized that, yeah, they're playing with house money, that, like, you know, maybe another star is coming soon. Maybe this is not the best iteration of this Heat team. Like, Bam is absurdly young, Hero is absurdly young, Duncan's pretty young, like, Butler, I mean, he's the one like kind of wild card, but like, he's pretty consistently good. I don't think he's gonna drop off anytime soon.
They're playing for the second round. Like, we're playing, like, this team is so good. And their offense, and honestly, like, we've talked a lot, and we've banged a loud fucking drum all year about the defense as a concern. And I'm not, like, totally, I mean, they've been better in the playoffs, and they're switching a ton more, and they're doing a lot of things, and they're competing, and Goran's playing a lot better, and Jimmy's a lot more engaged, so, like, the defense has improved, and I still have concerns. If, God forbid, they have to play a Kemba Walker, or if they get to the Raptors and they have to play those really fast guards, right? That I still have questions about Hero and Dragic and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're looking at the Bucks and we're looking at conference finals. I think that's a reasonable goal. And I think that when we see Milwaukee struggle against Orlando, and I think with the Heat success against him in the regular season, maybe it's a little naive or maybe it's a little cocky Heat fan to think, but I think that, you know, like, if they don't push the Bucks to like six or seven games, I think that we're gonna be disappointed.
Yeah, I definitely see that. Like what me and Jack are talking about playing with house money. It's just like, we expected them to win the first round against Indiana, but anything after that, like, you're pretty much satisfied. Like, barring a sweep against Milwaukee or something like that, that's I think that would be pretty much the only way we would be disappointed, or like a serious injury. But the way this season's gone, the way last offseason went, everything just has been going the Miami's way for a while, that we're just like, we're happy, we're satisfied. We don't have to watch Hassan Whiteside play anymore.
I watched Hassan play in Portland. Matt, I know you missed that Blazers game. It was pretty fun watching Hassan. It was pretty fun watching Hassan block LeBron.
You know what's really fun? Watching Hassan on another team.
Exactly.
That is so fun. Because you don't have to deal with the laxes in defense. You know, you don't have to deal with
him hunting rebounds and blocks. No, no, no.
Not a problem.
I'm good.
Not a problem.
All day, 10 days.
I love, listen, I'm all in on Bam. The Heat offense is so legit. Like, I was kind of halfway through the point, but I pivoted a second ago. But, like, you know, we complain about the defense a lot and we whine and everything, but the offense, that's been, I mean, I remember preseason, I was like, yeah, you know, like if Jimmy Butler can kind of get them to top 12 offense, you know, if he can, because their offense was pretty rough, especially without Wayne Ellington. It was a dumpster fire. It was a lot of.
But that goes into Nikias's piece. It was not just.
Read that.
Yes,
read on 5reasonsports.com. Check that out. Nikias Duncan, our own statistician and pun master, wrote a great piece about the Heat offense and Spo, and it's one of the best things. Man, that guy, he's one of the best people I've ever met in my life, one of the hardest workers, one of the most talented, smart, thoughtful, great people. Go read his work, and there's way more of him to come. That guy has the best future ahead of him. Brighter than Bam and Duncan and Tyler. Nikias' future.
Ceiling. No ceiling.
The ceiling is Zach Lowe and even higher.
Yeah.
Speaking of
to your point, Frankie.
I was saying, a lot of the issue, me and Nikias would talk about this last year all the time. It's that part of the reason their offense was so good when Wayne was on the court was that they finally ran stuff off the court, off the ball. They ran and they occupied the help defense, and it made life so much easier on the ball. For everybody, when you occupy help, there's nobody to pick at the ball when you're driving. There's nobody to bother you to rotate over it and it makes everything so much easier. Now they're doing that all the time. Whether Duncan's on the court, Hero's on the court, they're running, they're setting screens, they're moving off the ball, they're cutting, they're doing so much more offensively than they were in years past. And that's credit to Spo, which shows that coaches can evolve, coaches can grow. And Spo has consistently showed that when he hits a roadblock, he's gonna punch through that that wall and get better.
Sundays are back in the NFL. Watch NFL Sunday Ticket.tv. You could stream every live out-of-market NFL game every Sunday afternoon on your favorite device. Plus Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels. Never miss your favorite teams and favorite players. No matter where you live, NFL Sunday Ticket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. Use promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use promo code BLUEWIRE. So, with Spo, like, I think it's really funny how there were conversations that he wasn't that good or, like, he's been carried by LeBron, and I think those people are clearly not only not watching the games, but they aren't understanding what he's schematically doing, how flexible he's been, and how he's installed systems that really maximize a lot of role players. And now when there are legit stars and people with promise, it's been to the moon and back. It's been incredible. So something I really wanted to get into, because it's probably been the only thing of concern this series. Derek Jones Jr. hasn't looked very good. they're bleeding. I think Derek was a minus like 11 or 12 today. The only negative player on the Heat. Yeah. In 13 minutes, really not good. The game before that, Nikias and I and us were talking about, like, it's been rough, and I'm kind of wondering, so if Derek becomes unplayable against Milwaukee, because it might, I mean, listen, and I we've joked a lot on the show for years about the DJ Augustine minutes when he was in Indiana and how the Pacers literally could not survive 3 minutes of DJ Augustine because LeBron and Dwayne saw blood and they were trapping those picks hard as fuck and they were turning them over, and Indiana literally could not live without George Hill on the floor. And not that it's going to be that extreme because Derek's not a ball handler. They're really having him play a lot of like four now. There's not really a lot of minutes for him at the three where he's more comfortable with. And when you play him at the four, you know, they really require him to be a screener in the high pick and roll for Gordon and Jimmy. It's good because it gets him downhill bad because he's like really skinny and not a good screener. And I think the defense has left a lot to be desired on the table. Obviously not a shooter. And I'm kind of wondering, like, going forward, like, are they just going to go to eight? Are they going to reintroduce none? I don't really think playing Myers is the answer. I mean, I don't think adding another big to the rotation is a solution. Do we see Solomon Hill, who I thought, you know, Solomon's our boy, not going to lie. But, you know, played well when he got time on the floor, is a reliable shooter, can crossover master. I don't know. Yeah, I have concerns.
I would like to see some Solomon Hill, like, instead of Derrick Jones. I think my first instinct is that they just shorten the rotation. Just cut him out.
We're doing Mike D'Antoni?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, you're not traveling. Like, there is, like, a lot of wear and tear that gets cut out just because you're in a bubble. Nobody's traveling. Like, I do think that you can kind of afford that. And I think that would be the best move. I would love to see Solomon Hill. The reason I don't think we do is because I just don't think he got enough run in the regular season where – I mean, maybe if you get some garbage time in this Pacers series, maybe they pull him out or maybe they pull none out. But, like, I just don't see Spo putting him in given how little run he got in the regular season. And, you know, Spo's crazy. I don't know what he's going to do. I feel stupid predicting anything. Like, I didn't think he was going to take Myers out of the rotation. But, like, I don't think that's going to be the move. I think they should go to 8 if they find Derrick Jones to be unplayable, which I do think he has been unplayable.
So Kelly played 12 minutes today, which I didn't even think he was bad. I mean, when they went to the Bam Kelly 2-big lineup, they had a lot of success, and that's really when they got the lead back in the second quarter, and then they really never looked back, and they weren't even playing that well, but I really thought that high-low game with Bam and Kelly is really good. But Kelly played 12 minutes, and Derrick played about 13. So that's a lot of guys playing 30 minutes. Jimmy played 37, Bam played 32, and that was because he had foul trouble early. Gordon played 32, Tyler played 34. You know, Andre is an older guy at 28. Duncan playing only 25 is a little weird, but, you know, I'm sure that'll change. And you know, I don't really know if shortening the rotation is the answer. I mean, they're already really, there's a heavy load of minutes on guys, and I know that they had a long layoff, and this is a sprint, right, to the conference finals. You know, they've had a lot of rest, their bodies are good, but and I know Spo likes Spo usually keeps a 9-man playoff rotation, so I don't know. I'm not a big fan of, like, really heavy minutes on those guys, but I know against the Bucks, you know, maybe that's gonna be what they have to do.
But how heavy is it? It's not that heavy.
I mean, a lot of guys are playing 30 plus minutes.
Yeah, you know, but like, I mean you just said, like, Kelly only played 12 minutes. If he absorbed all of Derrick Jones's minutes, he's not even playing 30 minutes, he's playing like 25 minutes, and like Crowder only played 25 minutes. I do think, like, just give those minutes to Crowder and Olynyk, and, like, you know, that's fine. I don't know,
round out.
Yeah. I would like, you're playing with house money, you're going back home up 2-0, you might as well try Solomon or Nunn, see if they can give you anything once you finish.
Oh, I think Nunn's done though.
I think Nunn is done too. Nunn's done. I mean, I would rather give Solomon because I'm just a fan of wings in general and in rotations. Especially, he's a bigger wing. He can help stop the monster that is TJ Warren. I couldn't even say that with a straight face. Quotes.
Do you think if they play the Bucks, they go back to Nunn? Because, like, I know that he's not been hitting the pull up, but with the drop scheme that they run, that could be a way. He's a guy that Jack is just furiously shaking his head.
I don't think Nunn sees any, like, real minutes the rest of the playoffs. I think they look really good right now. Like, I think especially their guard, like, Goran looks way too good for you to even, like, consider putting, like, Goran.
That's a Hero lot of minutes. I don't want Goran playing 30 minutes. I don't want Goran playing.
But, like, Hero looks really good too. Like, their other guards look fine.
We talked about, like, dividing minutes. I think that the first, like, first course of – and Goran's been great. First course of action is to get Goran under 30 minutes. That's a lot for him.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that. I just don't see where you put Nunn back in. Like, he wasn't good, and I don't think he gives you anything that, like, you desperately need, especially during the Bucks. Like, the Bucks series, like, he's not a smart defender. It's not like he's giving you more on that end. And, like,
the
shooting
is what you want, yeah.
Yeah, but, like, the pull-up wasn't falling, and I don't think it's good enough to, like, risk it. Like, again, if you see garbage time minutes, like, yeah. But, I mean, we're talking about playing with house money, but in this Bucks series, I do really want to see them be competitive, if only because this is, like, the highest national stage they'll be on. I want to see Bam do really well and, like, you know, like, gain a national reputation as that dude, and Duncan gain a reputation as that dude. Because honestly, like, a ton of people still don't know who Duncan Robinson is, and a ton of people still don't know how
good. Learn today.
Yeah, they're Indiana going to does. Learn in the Bucks. Yeah, Indiana does. Anybody who's played him knows. But like, you know, in a Bucks series, like, you're getting national attention in a way you haven't gotten all season, and like, a lot of people don't know how good Bam is yet. A lot of people don't.
You mean
know
the Magic series?
Yeah. Exactly. Like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I want to see them push it to 6 or 7. And just be competitive in a way that showcases, one, how great a coach Spo is, how amazing a shooter Duncan is, and how promising a superstar Bam will be. Like,
No, go, Frankie.
It's a trial for Giannis.
No, and Miami would have the coaching advantage most definitely against Milwaukee. Orlando. But you know, in the next round, Miami definitely needs to, you know, sort out the back end of the rotation with DJJ, because if he's unplayable against Indiana, there's no way you can play him against Milwaukee or Orlando, especially with how shorthanded Indiana is offensively right now.
Try to go a little bigger. You think Myers may get a little play?
I'm more for Solomon because of how he's looked in the bubble. We haven't seen Myers in the bubble, so I wouldn't break that glass right now. But Portland has said that playoff Myers is a thing, so maybe, you never know.
I wouldn't mind seeing Myers.
I have concerns what he can do defensively, and I know that the numbers bear out that he helps them, but I don't know. I don't really trust it. The other thing is, you know, all season they've done a lot of Bam at center, but they've 100% lead into it that just the minutes that Bam's not at center as a lone big has been anomalous.
Can I read this Bam stat that Cooper Moorhead just posted?
Please, we love Coop.
Through two games, here's Bam on the floor. Plus 42, 131.8 offensive rating. Now, when he's off the floor, it's a minus 21, a 78.7 offensive rating.
In the two games,
the Pacers? Pacers series. That's
DJJ at the five.
There were a lot of like centerless minutes with like Jimmy and Jay, those little two bigs with Derek.
Especially with that foul trouble, yeah. Bam didn't have a great, like, I mean, he had a quiet performance. I thought he played well, but I mean, if you look at the stats, not like an incredible game, but like
he didn't have a great box score game.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm not a stat watcher.
He had a good culture game.
Yeah.
You know, you box score watchers don't know about the culture, you know?
Learn the game.
You got to really learn the game. God, I miss Spoon so much.
I mean, he centers the team. He's such a smart player. Like, I mean, look, I mean, I can't get into every little thing he did because I'm not that smart. I'm very stupid. But
aren't we all?
Yeah.
Not Frankie.
No.
2K coach.
You're above us.
I'm not a 2K coach. I'm not a statistician. I'm just kind of a guy who talks.
You're a trash tweeter.
I'm a trash tweeter, and I'm a trash talker. I mean, he knows where to be on the floor. He's an incredible passer, and like, even if he gets like, what did he end with, like 7 points? Like, he's still making this incredible impact on the team. Like,
I'm sure he had screen assists too.
He had 17 points.
He had 17 points?
No, he had 17, 10, and 6, and you're saying bad box score.
There's no way. Bam Adebayo?
Yes. That is the quietest 17 and 10.
I don't think he had 17.
Oh, that was game one. My bad. That was game one.
I was
he had 7,
say
5, and 4.
Yeah, that's what I
was like, holy shit, where'd those 17 come from?
Yeah, but he led the team in plus minus. Like, he was plus 19. Like, he's the real deal. Even when he's not
scoring.
I mean,
they can't run. So when Kelly doesn't play a lot, like, they can't run the dribble handoff stuff as well.
Or the pick and roll.
No, absolutely. It was a lot of Derek screening, and I don't really like when they're doing DHOs with guards. So, like, Tyler, in the beginning, I thought it was a fun idea, but, like, sometimes Tyler and Duncan run it together, and it's just not been good because it's just a really switchable thing. It's a no-brainer for teams, so they can't really get what they want off of it. So, and Kelly only played 12 minutes, so they didn't get a lot of that also. But that's kind of looking forward.
Yeah, the guard-to-guard DHOs are more so if, like, one or both of them can attack with like just the slightest angle. And Hero can, but I guess he's just not at that level yet where he's comfortable on like a quick grab and go.
And I think maybe he can get it. I mean, so today, Tyler faked the DHO and went to the basket, which is very Kelly Olynyk-esque. I love that. I want more of that.
Yeah, his reads are improving so much. One thing off the ball, he definitely needs to get in the gym with Duncan so he can learn to move off the ball like him. He's decent to pretty good at the scramble drill. But when it comes to just like running off screen, running motion, constantly moving to get open, he needs to work on that. You can tell he's definitely played a lot with the ball in his hands coming up.
So something that, and this is just speculation, I'm sure that somebody who's around the team more often would be able to answer, but like, the fact that Ray Allen still lives in Miami, and I think from what I understand, Ray has had a repaired relationship with the organization. If a guy like Ray, if Tyler could get a real offseason, and Duncan too, with a guy like Ray, I think that'd be huge. And I think a guy like, and I know that Tyler said that Mike Miller has been in contact with him when they were on the bubble break or the before the restart or whatever, which is huge. But like a guy like Ray Allen, I think a lot of really, really great players have a difficult time explaining their greatness. That's why Michael Jordan is a bad talent evaluator. And that's why those high top 10 players of all time type stuff tend to not be the best coaches. But a guy like Ray Allen he's a product of mechanics and hard work and labor, and I think a lot of that's teachable. I even remember, Dwayne Wade shot was his best free throw percentage ever when Ray Allen was here because he was able to help with that. And I think having a guy like that helps you a ton. And I would like to see stuff like that in the, like when they have a real offseason, how he could help improve them in that sense.
Yeah, I would like to see them help with the free throw shooting, just like you said, because it's bad.
In general, he's a guy that can move off the ball. He's the best off-ball mover ever.
Yeah, he's Ray Allen.
Which, by the way, I tweeted this out of the Heat Beat account. Does Ray Allen have a top three shooting season? Is Ray Allen a top three Heat shooter of all time?
No, I don't.
It's Wayne and it's Duncan. Wayne had the best shooting season ever before Duncan on a Heat uniform. Now it's Duncan, clearly. And then what is number three? Jason Capono? Jason Capono was a fucking badass from three here.
Who's in the conversation? Glenn Rice, Jason Capono. Eddie Jones,
like low key, had a really good. He's like second all time in threes for the Heat, and he shot like 38% down here.
Yeah,
I looked it up. I don't have this memorized.
I think Capono. So I'm pulling up the Capono numbers. It was something ridiculous. So in his best Miami season, he was a 51% 3-point shooter off only three attempts. Though we have to put the grade on a curve for the times. He was a product of the times. The year before that, he was 39%, almost 40%.
I love looking at Capono in a jersey and just remembering the fashion of that time, because he does not look like a Heat player now in the same build. Like, he does not look like he's gone through Heat conditioning. His arms, he's got flabby arms. He looks like a bro hanging around Bayside in a Heat jersey after a game.
Which is weird, because that's when Pat coached. Yeah, you're exactly right. Oh, my God.
Look at his arm. Hair.
Yeah,
that guy looks like a skater, bro.
Who is the person who least looks like a Heat player? I'm all in with Luke Babbitt.
Luke Babbitt,
you might have it there.
I think Luke Babbitt.
I think that's a winner.
Dexter Pittman.
Oh, Dexter Pittman.
Pittman, the Heat player. Come on.
Do you guys remember when Spoelstra's like big move was like, when the chips were down, when the season was on the line, going into Indiana, a much scarier Pacer team, at a time when the world felt like it was falling apart, and Spo's big move was like, fuck it, we're starting Dexter Pittman at the five. Let's go, Roy Hibbert.
I was so excited.
I think people don't understand why Hassan was such an enticing player for the Heat, but it was because they went like 4 years with no center, like no
guy
who could
grab a rebound. The pain we went through.
But like the way that like Eric Reid and Tony Fiorentino talked about, like Trilly makes fun of this all the time, but the way they talked about like Hassan grabbing rebounds, they're just like so proud of him for like just pulling down any rebound. And it's just because like for the past half decade, they just didn't have a guy like that. They had nobody. Like, Bosch is an incredible center, but like they were just outsized in every, like, it was a pre small ball league for the most part, and they were the only small ball team in a pre small ball league, and like they were just getting muscled out. Like, if that was the, like, there was like one big fault of the big three Heat, and it was rebounding. And that's why Hibbert gave them such problems. Like, even though he's not, you know, he's not an incredible player, like they just got muscled out. And like, then you get Hassan, who, you know, for all his flaws, blocked some very cool shots and pulled down some very impressive rebounds, and was just like in the air, like arms up, like nothing we had seen before. And like, it didn't matter how bad he was exciting, like just for that physical presence that we didn't have for like the previous five years.
It's like when you break up with someone and then you date the total opposite.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like, it was also the big three. Like, we were how many guys that prospects or G League guys that they signed after at the end of the bench? Terrell Harris.
Oh, Mikael the Atlanta Blondis. Gave Terrell Harris though.
Yeah.
Greg, like, Oden, all these guys. I mean, yeah. Like,
there's so
none
many
of
saviors.
Those guys panned out.
Yeah.
None of those guys panned out.
Eddie Curry,
NBA champion Ronnie.
I was about to say NBA champion Eddie Curry to us.
But you signed all these guys that none of those guys really gave you anything. And then all of a sudden, once LeBron leaves, they get Hassan, they get Tyler, they get all these Duncan, they get Nunn, they find guys at the bottom of the barrel that you're like, damn it, we couldn't hit on one of these guys during the big three era.
Yo, imagine if Tyler Johnson and Hassan were with LeBron. I mean, Tyler, I've said this forever. I've given Tyler Johnson a lot of shit. Tyler is like the perfect LeBron guard. Dude has amazing hands, is a good shooter, can cut super well, can rebound, handle a little bit, defender.
Yeah, he's going to be 3-and-D guy.
They had a lot of guys like that who honestly probably would have stuck with the Heat had LeBron been there. Like, honestly, like a guy who, you know, not impressive at all, but Justin Hamilton, like somebody like
J-Ham!
That. Like,
that's the kind of guy.
Say Justin, did you stop?
That's the kind of guy that like LeBron could like sneakily turn into like a 10-minute game.
No.
LeBron, I don't
this
think
this is
he
not a
either.
Justin Hamilton apology podcast.
It's not an apology. I just don't think, like, Chris Anderson, who was like old and out of the league and undersized, was a revelation. And like,
no, but then don't disrespect Birdman like that.
Birdman
was out of the league for a different reason.
Yeah, yo, with I think that's irresponsible.
You can't tell me Justin Hamilton is like one
didn't
like
try
that,
that
much worse
a white
than
guy,
like
a white
Dex,
big?
Like
am I, white am shooting I big.
I remember there was a guy because they called him.
They
Jorts.
Tried it. It was Josh McRoberts, and that's the reason why.
No,
LeBron
it wasn't. It wasn't McRoberts.
It's not him.
It was during the Big Three era. It was like Harrelson or something, like Chris Harrelson or something like that.
Josh Harrelson.
Yeah. Josh Harrelson.
Yeah, Jorts.
Jorts. Yeah. That's Jorts.
That's what I'm saying. They had so many like bottom of the barrel people who like were kind of playable just because they had the Big Three around them. Like, I'm not like Justin Hamilton,
Stop.
The random example. I'm not
Stop.
Defending Justin Hamilton.
You picked a bad
saying,
example.
Like, that was a terrible example.
Let's
Luke Babbitt.
Go, like, Kem Birch. Like, Kem Birch.
You're trying to bring back your 2015 Kem Birch takes.
Or, like, I mean, James Ennis, who is like a decent role player.
You're just recycling your old takes.
No, but like, here's what I'm saying is like, James Ennis is like a role player now, but like, the reason he didn't work out with the Heat is because they had nobody to handle around him. Like, if they had LeBron. Like with James Ennis, like James Ennis would have like been a decent role player for the Big Three, just because that's the power of LeBron. Like,
do you remember when
he wouldn't have
he
had to do anything
on Rasul Butler, and we had decided that this is the guy we're worshiping now?
He's a good player. Like, I mean, he's not a bad player. He just can't.
Where is he now?
What is he on?
He's not on Memphis anymore.
He was on the Sixers for a little bit, and then Orlando.
James Ennis,
King James.
Yeah.
Ball reference.
He's the role.
I remember how excited we were draft night. They're like, oh, he traded second round for this guy.
He's in Orlando. Oh, that's right. He was with Philly. He was with Philly last year.
I will always resent the James Ennis stuff because, I mean, yeah, like I led part of the hype train, but then like people took it too far where people were looking at like his open gym workout videos and we were like, oh, he kind of looks like Kevin Durant here.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, you guys are crazy. Like,
that's the opposite of what we do on Draft Night, where we just like denounce guys like Bam and Tyler, and they're like the linchpins of our success.
We've learned, though. We can't do that to Kentucky guys.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro athletes Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champion Robert Horry. See what they had to say and what it'll be like playing about fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.